Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Stephen Swart is a Member of Parliament in South Africa and one of the conveners of the Christian Democratic Party of South Africa. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John, and good evening to your listeners.
Stephen, Christian Democratic Party, let's first talk about why you would get into politics, and then particularly why a party called the Christian Democrats. You're a lawyer. South Africa has been through a period of immense change, particularly over the last decade, and just recently we've seen a new president elected. You've lived through probably one of the most remarkable periods in your country's existence. What made you think you had a calling to politics?
Well, firstly, I'd like to thank the Australians for their prayers for South Africa during the transition of 1994. Clearly for me, as a Bible-believing Christian, I was initially a lawyer practicing, and I felt the calling to make a difference in South Africa and to avail myself in the political realm. I obviously aligned myself with the African Christian Democratic Party, and it was the most amazing thing that I stood for election and was elected in 1994. The basis of my life is a prayer-based life, and why I focused and thank Australian listeners for praying for South Africa. We've got an ongoing sense of prayer in South Africa, which I really believe is one of the answers to the many challenges that we face within South Africa and at that stage, which we did face.
One of the most remarkable things for those who've observed South Africa over the years, and particularly that period of change, is the significance of religion in the life of the nation. And in the sense, religion provided the bridge. You had the old Africana establishment advocating one view of the Exodus journey, of the journey of let my people go, which was linked
Quite
to the
correct.
Boers and the Great Trek.
Quite correct.
But you had the black Africans saying, no, this actually symbolizes something else. This is Moses leading his people into the promised land, and it's a symbol of black freedom. And those two stories eventually fused.
Quite correct. And in fact, if one takes those two stories, they could have actually led to tremendous conflict. They were headed towards conflict. But we had the wonderful example of Nelson Mandela, who we believe was God's man for the time, who spoke about peace, reconciliation, forgiveness for what was past, and that formed the bridge for the new South Africa. So you're quite correct that South Africans are very religious, are very faith-based, and that formed the basis for a peaceful transition. And it is. Even the secular press recognized that it was a miracle of God that we had a peaceful transition, when all indications were that the Inkatha Freedom Party, the Zulus and the Khoisas and the Whites would have a major civil war. And in fact, we saw it in Rwanda that same month in that same year. So the potential was there. But we are very grateful for the prayers of the believers and for the fact that our faith and our Christianity built that bridge of reconciliation at a time when we desperately needed it. And who could forget Nelson Mandela standing at the Rugby Union World Cup with a Springbok rugby jersey, which was the icon of apartheid, in fact. And the whole of that rugby stadium, Ellis Park, at the rugby final against the Kiwis, shouting, Nelson, 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 a predominantly white audience. Is that not a wonderful example of reconciliation?
As a young man growing up through this, what shaped you? What were the attitudes that shaped you? Were your attitudes always ones that this system has to change, or did you see your own thoughts on these things evolving and changing? And what were the things that moved you?
Well, I think I supported politically the opposition to the then government, but I definitely benefited from apartheid. I received a good education. I received a legal education. And so I will never deny that fact. And that has made it all the more necessary and given me a passion to make amends for what happened and to bring that peace and restitution. And my particular passion has been justice reform, justice restoration.
There'd been many Christian groups on the other side too. There were Christian groups that supported the apartheid system. How did that work its way through? The old Africana, the very sort of hard sections of the Dutch Reformed Church. Has there been a transformation there? Have you seen people change and shift?
There has, most definitely. And in fact, the apartheid system was justified by the Afrikaans church at that stage. And they have subsequently said it was a heresy, it was incorrect. And we all knew it was incorrect. But again, I do not want to deny the fact that we benefited from it. There has been a substantial change. And of course, our churches are now all open to all races. And the Dutch Reformed Church has done a lot to build the bridges across the races as well. So we're very pleased about that. And remember, whilst it was Nelson Mandela, it also took the white leadership under F.W. de Klerk's leadership to lay down power, lay down military power, and negotiate a future. So it was, as you remember, both of them received the Nobel Peace Prize.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio Around Australia. John Cleary with you. Our guest is Stephen Schwart of the African Christian Democratic Party, one of the parties that makes up the political life of South Africa. Stephen is a member of parliament, and the African Christian Democratic Party are a part of the political process in that country. Stephen, we've talked about what took you into politics. Let's talk about the nature of a party like the African Christian Democratic Party. In that transition period in South Africa, there were a number of parties, particularly the ANC, that was seen as the driving force. But I can recall having a discussion with Bishop Tutu at one stage immediately after that process, when he'd instructed members of the Anglican priesthood to divorce themselves from the ANC. He said, leave the ANC, because the church has to stand in critical collaboration to politics. Yes, we were there in the struggle because it was something we joined forces on, but now we actually have to stand apart so we can be an honest voice to the political process.
Quite correct, John, and we fully believe there should be the separation between the church and the state as institutions. And I think Archbishop Tutu then, as head of the Anglican Church, was correct in distancing himself from the African National Congress, as he was the head of the church and the African National Congress was the head of the state. We, as the African Christian Democratic Party, hold the view that Christians should be involved in politics, not as the church as an institution, but as individuals. And we have the full right. And just on that regard, you've got the wonderful example here of Fred Nile, who we honor for his 28 years in the Christian Democratic Party here in Australia, for the stance that he has taken. Now, the attribute of having a person of faith is the honesty and integrity that he brings to the office. And I have been so impressed as I've studied what he has done, not only on the moral issues, but on good governance. So there is a real need for Christians, for faith believers, to be involved in the political process. That does not mean that the institution of the church itself is involved. That remains separate, and we would fully support that. So we are Christians holding to the Christian democratic philosophy that has come from Europe, that was established after the Second World War. You will remember very strong Christians took up a stance at that stage. Konrad Adenauer was the founder, and we believe that there is a worldwide Christian philosophy of Christian democracies. You have social democracy. Christian democracy is a political philosophy upholding moral standards.
One of the problems is that great European tradition that you allude to, and you mentioned Konrad Adenauer in Germany. One of the problems that Christian Democrats in the European tradition have had in particular is the tendency for them ultimately to be corrupted by the political process themselves, the necessary to trade off and make deals. You've seen it particularly in Italy. There's a sense in which the label Christian can be a dangerous one, because people as individuals can be seduced by the system, by the trappings of power, by the need to do deals. So that the label Christian is no defence ultimately, is it?
John, you 100% correct. And in fact, it requires a higher standard almost. And when a Christian Democrat falls, you obviously, it's then, you can imagine the outcry. So you 100% correct. The calling and the involvement requires one to be very vigilant, to be very aware of what is going on around you, and to be aware that you're upholding a very high standard and what could happen if there is an allegation of corruption or something like that against the Christian Democrat, and the damage that it does to the calling of Christian democracy when it does happen. And you're quite correct to point out that it has happened. We try to be very vigilant. We try to be very aware of compromising situations. We are a constructive opposition party in parliament, in our federal, you'd call it federal parliament in South Africa, and the government, the governing party, is very well disposed to us in as much as we are constructive, but we are at all times open to differ from them on the specific issues, and we will continue to do that. But your point is 100% correct in that tradition, and one's got to be very aware of that, and there but by the grace of God go I.
You're on Sunday Night. Our guest is Stephen Swart, Member of Parliament for the African Christian Democratic Party in South Africa. Stephen, let's talk a little bit now about politics and about what people believe and why they believe. Christian Democratic Party, you outlined where basically beliefs come from. But in there's two things about that. In the national political tradition of both Australia and South Africa, Christians are represented in all parties. You have Christians on the left and Christians on the right. Why should it not be that they can affect change within those parties? Why do you need a party called Christian with a capital C?
John, I think your point is correct. There are Christians in various parties. However, many of them are constrained by their party whippery and by party policy to adhere to policies which they might not necessarily agree with. And I understand here in Australia there are politicians that are in parties that are far bigger than the Christian Democratic Party, but within that party are constrained to criticize their own party. That is a South African tradition as well. We have a party list system, which means you vote for the party and not the individual. We do not have a constituency-based election. And on the contentious moral issues, such as abortion, for example, our majority party, the ANC, passed legislation allowing abortion. Many of its own members of parliament were Christians and were critical of that policy, but were unable to oppose that policy within its own party. Therefore, that is why there is a need for a party, a Christian Democratic Party, that unashamedly upholds those policies and says, in our party, we will uphold those policies and come across to us and support us. We do not have to be afraid. Our policies, we believe, are in line with what the Word of God says.
Belief in what the Word of God says itself is an issue.
Open to interpretation.
Yes, and there would be Christians who would say, well, look, the Christian Democratic Party itself actually reflects a quite narrow spectrum of Christian opinion. It tends to be has a focus on small business, on sort of individual free enterprise, on things that aren't not necessarily tied to the Christian tradition. There's a whole Christian tradition of Christian socialism, for example, that comes out of the English labor tradition and is allied to the old Methodist way of viewing things that gave birth to the trade union movement. So how do you see yourself in relationship to that sort of tradition?
Well, the African Christian Democratic Party is broader in our outlook. Whilst we stand very strongly on the moral issues, such as abortion and such as same-sex marriage, we are very concerned about the widespread unemployment and poverty in South Africa. So we have, and it is very necessary for us as Christians to have that social conscience and to be actively engaged in uplifting the poor, particularly in South Africa and Africa. So we have a very strong social conscience, and in that regard we would be very close to social democrats who uphold that as well. So there is a very strong sense in that. The majority of our party's support comes from the black areas. So there is a very strong sense of upliftment, of social upliftment, and we fully appreciate that, and there's a very strong emphasis on that from our leadership, which is Dr. Kenneth Meshwe, himself a black leader in South Africa.
Kenneth Meshwe got himself into a little bit of bother over his statements regarding Barack Obama before the election. According to some interpretations, he was saying that Barack Obama was a Muslim. And this didn't go down well with a number of people and caused a few ruffled feathers in places in the United States.
I quite understand that, and that was his opinion, and we're waiting to see the outcome of what Barack Obama has said. He has been quite controversial on some of the moral issues, but we do welcome the fact of what he has said recently in Ghana to African leaders. He's been very outspoken, and as an African-American, calling upon African leaders to take responsibility for the state of the continent on Africa and not to continue blaming the West. So there are positive sides and negative sides to what we see with the election of President Obama.
Are you suggesting that it is possible that Obama is a Muslim?
Well, I personally have not gone into that in great detail, but I submit to my leader who held the view that he grew up in a Muslim background and that he might have certain tendencies and certain beliefs in that regard. One would be interested, I understand he did attend a church where there was a very strongly views that were expressed. And so we'd like to see what the outcome is. Let's rather judge a person by the fruit and let's give it a chance. But our leader, I fully respect his views and I do not disagree with the views that he expressed.
Obama himself has said he is a Christian and that one of his the theologians he identifies most with is Reinhold Niebuhr. You don't get that out of somebody who is actually a secret advocate of another tradition.
Correct. As we progress, let's see what develops from that view. At that stage, our leader held a certain view, and I appreciate that view and respect it.
The other thing that your leader was caused some noise in the West over was his views on Israel, that the covenant with Israel exemplified in the Bible was something that applied in today's political reality, and he defended Israel and lauded Israel for its stance in supporting the old apartheid regime, which seemed to many people quite a conundrum.
Well, the ACDP is strongly supportive of Israel based on our interpretation of certain of the scriptures, Genesis 12, and his view as a black South African was that the interpretation of Genesis 12 is that there is a blessing that comes upon a nation that blesses Israel. And that was his view, and we as the party agree with that view. And he stated that because the apartheid state had supported Israel, there was a blessing upon the nation. Whilst he, as a black person, had suffered under apartheid, and he fully acknowledged that fact, and he said there were a lot of bad things about apartheid, there are many black people today that even say, but under apartheid, there was less unemployment, poverty, and that, and so whilst they're not saying they wish it was still apartheid, there was a certain sense that there were some good things that had come out of that regime as well.
A lot of people would say that, hang on, to identify ancient Israel with the Israel of today is quite a leap, that they're two different political establishments coming out of two entirely different realities.
I understand that, John. There are many people that hold to replacement theology, and there are just as many evangelical Christians that do believe that Israel is a fulfillment of prophecy. And clearly that's where there's a divide amongst Christians, and I fully appreciate that. We would hold to the one view that Israel is a culmination of prophecy, that whilst the church can also take certain interpretations in references to Israel, but we see miraculous interventions in the state of Israel, which we would believe can be aspired to the word of God intervening on the nation of Israel.
It takes one into difficult areas, particularly as we're talking about sort of geopolitics here. For example, just going back to the Obama illustration for a moment, there are many Christian evangelicals who supported Obama, who regard Obama as perhaps one of the best recent examples of the way in which the whole Christian social justice tradition is exemplified. Our own Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, identifies himself as a Christian, regularly seen coming out of church on Sunday, is more comfortable speaking about Christian theology than almost any other prime minister in our recent history, regards himself as a very close ally of Obama on these very values questions. Sure. He speaks strongly of the influence of people like Bonhoeffer.
Sure. And John, I think that illustrates that there are many diverse voices in the Christian itself, in the Christian religion.
I guess which takes us back to this whole problem of a party calling itself the Christian Party, as if all its beliefs are the defining beliefs of Christianity.
Well, we would always say that we represent the voice of our voters, and that's a very important distinction. We at no stage say that we represent the voice of every Christian in South Africa, because at this stage they don't all vote for us. And many of them are voting for other parties. We would like to, and clearly persons that do vote for us would adhere to our interpretation of scriptures, which we would submit there are other Christians that differ with us. Sure, as we know, many faiths have different views and that, and we fully respect that.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia. John Cleary with you. Our guest is Stephen Schwart of the African Christian Democratic Party. Stephen, let's talk about the issues in South Africa that you face. We've recently seen an election of a new president that was surrounded by an enormous amount of controversy, which played out in the international press over whether or not he was not going to be the subject of some legal action, or whether or not his position had been achieved through sort of devious means. Now, these are always the cut and thrust of politics, but a position such as the president of a new republic in South Africa is one that people place an enormous amount of moral weight and moral value in. It's not like a prime minister who's a servant of their party. In some ways, they are the moral embodiment of the republic.
Yes, you're quite right, John. And there were a number of charges related to the arms deal and various other aspects related to corruption that were hanging over the head of Mr. Jacob Zuma, who was the incumbent. He was elected at the ANC's party conference to take that position. And at that stage, the charges were still pending. And we as opposition parties hoped that those charges would be finalized by a court of law before he was sworn in. What actually happened was that the prosecuting authority withdrew the charges shortly before the election, which regrettably left a cloud hanging over his head. A court did not make a final finding on guilt or innocence. Had I have been in his position, I would have preferred a court to have made that finding and not the prosecuting authority to have withdrawn charges, particularly when there were other court cases that found that there was a degree of bribery involving other members that were closely aligned to him. And so we regret that decision, but he was elected. He is our state president now, and we've been pleasantly surprised at the way that he has been engaging with the opposition parties. We will continue to be vigilant in terms of our constitution. We have a very strict oversight role, and what has been pleasing to us is the fact that he is holding his cabinet ministers highly to account and has encouraged Parliament, which was previously a rubber stamp of the majority party, to hold the executive and himself closely accountable and call them to account as to every aspect of their executive work. And for example, we as Parliament now can amend our budget, which is a big step. So there are some very positive developments. It's early days still. We see the season of strikes taking place across the nation, which is quite interesting because it does indicate an element of the support that Mr. Zuma received from the trade unions, COSATU, are flexing their muscles and are saying, we put you in power and we want better salaries, better wages, which is obviously quite difficult in a recessionary climate. But we are pleased in that regard that Mr. Zuma has not changed any macroeconomic policies. We are dependent on foreign direct investment, and any sharp swing to the left would have been the wrong message to jittery foreign investors in view of the fact that we are an emerging market with a commodity-based economy, and any wrong signal would have caused capital flight out of the country.
Before we get to the particulars, I want to go back to that first point you raised in relation to Jacob Zuma, and it's with a cloud of charges hanging over his head and the way they were not resolved prior to him becoming president. With a young republic, can leave people with a clear idea in their own mind that somehow the due processes of the republic have been fractured. That is, a young republic needs to have a degree of continuity and stability so that confidence in the rule of law can be gained.
Here
was a moment where confidence in the rule of law was at risk. You're saying you think that has been negotiated successfully, or is it still pretty wobbly?
I would say that it has been negotiated successfully. The aspect of the rule of law is a cornerstone of our democracy. Our institutions, and particularly our constitutional court and courts, are still independent, are still strong. We have a number of new appointments that have to be made to the Constitutional Court, and I think that will be the acid test. What will be the standard of the judges that are appointed to our highest court? And will the president adhere to the recommendations of our Judicial Services Commission, which is made up of a broad variety of members of the legal fraternity, politicians, and that will then enshrine the independence of our judiciary? The point that you make is correct, however, that there were a lot of questions asked around the independence of our prosecuting authorities.
Yes, because the worst position to be in would be to have parties such as the Christian Democratic Party saying we've lost confidence in the system.
Correct.
Because at that point, you lose confidence in the Republic.
Absolutely, and we definitely have not reached that stage yet. Whilst there have been very irresponsible utterances made against the judiciary in the run-up to the elections by members of the ANC, they've been brought to task. And Mr. Zuma has stated that the party is fully supportive of the independence of the judiciary. And we see that. And the most important test of that is when the executive, when the government adheres to court orders that are granted by the courts. And at this stage, there's no question that they are in total submission to court orders that have been given. And therefore, we have that strict separation of powers, which is the nub of a successful democracy. And yes, we are a democracy still in transition, but the independence of the judiciary is crucial with a strong parliamentary oversight. And I think those two we will see further being developed as we go along. So I remain eternally optimistic.
Well, let's push that optimism a little further. We've seen what's happened in Zimbabwe. Mugabe, for many years, ran what was seen to be, by a number of people, a healthy transitional state. And over recent years, it's decayed into the mess we see today. The root cause of that seems to have been communal politics, that is, playing the card on behalf of your communal group. There are still elements of communal politics in South Africa. You see the old Zulu tradition there with the Inkatha Freedom Party and Buthelezi and others. To what extent is that sort of thing beginning now to sort of moderate and you're seeing a broader...
We definitely are seeing that. One needs to bear in mind that the ANC traditionally comes from the Isikoza tribe. You had Mr. Nelson Mandela from that tribe. You had Mr. Thabo Mbeki from that tribe. The new president, Mr. Jacob Zuma, comes from the Zulu tribe. So that clearly indicates that we have that communal sense, which is very positive, a greater degree of acceptance amongst the various tribes and a building of a social cohesion in South Africa. One of the main reasons that Zimbabwe fell was that South Africa did not take a stronger stance in diplomacy against Zimbabwe. The then president, Thabo Mbeki, had ample time to exert pressure on Mr. Mugabe, but chose not to, for whatever reasons. Maybe it might be a sense of alignment with a co-liberation movement. And it was quite dramatic that Mr. Jacob Zuma was very outspoken in his criticism and in his efforts to bring about a change in Zimbabwe. And we see now a government of national unity in Zimbabwe, where we've got Mr. Morgan Tsvangirai of the Movement of Democratic Change, the MDC, plus Robert Mugabe in a government of national unity. So we are on the right track. I believe it could have been done 10 years ago.
Let me ask you one other question related to Zimbabwe. You've seen a good example of where Christians can have widely different views and be seen to be either advantaging or damaging the church through their views, as articulated by the Zimbabwe example. There are some churchmen who've taken a strong stand against Robert Mugabe. There are other members of Christian churches who are high up in the Mugabe regime still and say they remain there in order to moderate the policies. This can become terribly problematic.
I agree with you, John, absolutely. And I must say that the church played in Zimbabwe came under tremendous persecution, where the soldiers, in fact, were closing church doors and preventing members. There were, at one stage, no meetings were allowed at all. So prayer meetings, worship meetings were not allowed at all by dictate of the state. Thankfully, that has now been stopped. But at the height of the Mugabe regime, when they were really clamping down on members, Christian members speaking out, and we know the Archbishop of Harare was very outspoken in his criticism against the Mugabe regime and was persecuted as a result of that. Obviously, there might have been members, church members, that were receiving benefits from the government and would tend to support and be sympathetic to the government. That is regrettable, clearly, because the majority of the Zimbabweans were suffering unashamedly, shaming conditions of living, having to eat grass to survive. And that is the reason that we set him with almost 3 million Zimbabweans in South Africa that have fled Zimbabwe just to survive. So your point is 100% correct. It's regrettable that some Christians would have, for their own purposes, chosen to support and receive him benefit, whilst there were very strong and courageous Christians that criticized the government.
Let me ask you one other question on the communal area before we move on, and that is the white tribe of South Africa, as they were called for many years. How's the black-white issue resolving itself today?
Well, I think we've gone a long way, and I speak as a white South African. I've been really been blessed by the fact that when I was elected to Parliament in 1999, I arrived there as a white male with an Afrikaans surname, and I was embraced by the black ANC and the black members of Parliament. And that was overwhelming to me, and I really appreciate that. Clearly, we've come a long way in the new South Africa of racial tolerance, of understanding one another. Obviously, there are issues of restitution that are taking place. There is legislation that is quite contentious, the black economic empowerment, the upliftment of the black people, which many white people would see to disadvantage them. But we fully believe that there is a need for that in the short term to bring the different races to the same level playing ground, where you've had blacks that have been disadvantaged over many years that have to be uplifted. So we as a party are supportive of those policies, but we believe there should be a sunset clause introduced so far, and then surely we are on all playing level grounds. Otherwise, you're then facing that white and Asian groups and coloured groups that are now finding that they are being prejudiced against. It's a continuing cycle then, yes, that can perpetuate itself.
And the examples throughout Southeast Asia, I think, are probably the best. You have the Malaysian example over the years where they had to play communal politics for many years simply because the majority group were so disadvantaged that not to give some communal recognition to the particular disadvantage in the constitution was a problem. The argument is now, how far have we got beyond that? And the desire of the group who've got those benefits to hang on to them for as long as they can. I guess it's a path you have yet to negotiate.
It is a path we have yet to negotiate. The black economic empowerment policies have been widely criticised for only benefiting a few individuals who have become multi-billionaires and not giving advantage to the broad black people. So there is a way to go. I believe there's place for that policy, but there is a limit to how long it should be allowed.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. Our guest is Stephen Schwart, Member of Parliament for the African Christian Democratic Party. Stephen, we haven't got that much longer to spend, but let's talk about a couple of particular issues now. Thabo Mbeki got into trouble over his understanding of the AIDS issue. People saw that as bizarre.
I fully agree, John, and we as the ACDP felt it just as bizarre. Total AIDS denialism, and he seemed, with respect to him as a former state president, to have done some internet research and clambered onto some AIDS dissidents that had some strange views, and this was almost interpreted through to his Minister of Health and the classical garlic and beetroot remedy for AIDS, and it became known as AIDS denialism. And one of the consequences of that was that the AIDS activist groups had to go to the Constitutional Court to force the government to roll out antiretroviral treatment to HIV sufferers. And the court issued that order. The government has complied with that order. But it is so sad that we had to reach that extreme.
In Australia, recently there's been much discussion about whether or not we're not reaching a third stage of the AIDS pandemic across the world, and whether governments, particularly in developing countries, have some difficulties in acknowledging that the real people who need the retrovirals are those most poor, and in some ways those most sort of morally cast out. The prostitutes, the drug dealers. These are the people who actually need the retrovirals because that's where the disease is spreading most rapidly. How do the ACDP face those sort of issues?
Well, in South Africa, it is, as we know, sub-Saharan Africa has got the widest spread of HIV/AIDS. So whilst we fully acknowledge those groups would need treatment, but it is far wider in South Africa. And even the government's rollout programs at the moment are not reaching the full need. We've got millions of South Africans that have the virus and need that treatment. So to us, the issue is far wider. We have 1,000 people per day that are dying of AIDS. it's almost like a locomotive steaming towards us.
It's a critical national policy issue.
Absolutely.
And it's also linked to the sort of wider moral issues. And I notice, for example, on prostitution, one of your stances is very interesting. It says, look, don't punish the victim here. Don't punish the prostitute. Don't legislate against the prostitute. Go for the procurer. Follow the money, in a sense.
That is correct.
And this is a view which the ACDP would see as necessary from both its Christian and its broadly civil justice stance.
Absolutely. And we believe that prostitutes need to be, most of them in South Africa do not want to be there and would like an alternative vocation. And we persuaded the ANC government to include in our sexual offences bill exactly what you say, going after the client and the procurer as well. But at the same time, implementing programs to assist, because it's one thing to remove the demand, but there's still that need, socioeconomic need, where prostitutes need some income. And I think that is where we need to find programs and employment.
Stephen, unfortunately, we're almost out of time. We've got time perhaps for one other thing, and that's a piece of music. And Nkosi Sikelel' is not just an inspiring anthem. The words actually speak to much of what the Christian Democratic Party is on about. Just give us a brief translation of the words.
Yes, John, it's a classic hymn that was written way back before in the apartheid times almost by a black person crying out, God bless Africa, Nkosi Sikelel' iAfrika. And that is why it's apt to conclude our interview with that hymn, as there are many, many millions of South Africans that are calling out to God to save South Africa and to save Africa. And it is time for the sons and daughters of Africa to arise and take responsibility to find the solutions for South Africa. And we as the African Christian Democratic Party are playing a part in finding those solutions.
Stephen Swart, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John. I really enjoyed it.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. You can download your favourite Sunday night interviews from our website at abc.net.au/Sunday Nights with an S. Thank you for listening.